Welcome to the Press Box on CKDJ 107.9.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the first episode of the reboot of the Press Box on CKDJ 107.9. I'm Ryan Woods, and with me this week is Eric Fox and Zach Nadeau. How's it going, guys?
Oh, not too bad. And yourself, Ryan?
Super fantastic. I'm riding high after Ottawa beat Toronto on Sunday night. And even though they lost to the Canucks in overtime on Monday and things didn't look good last night, especially in the first period at times, I'm excited that we beat the Leafs, and that's all I can ask for. How are you doing, Zach?
Oh, I'm doing great. It's been great Northern Division hockey so far. And me, Eric and I just had our taste of live hockey covering the Brockville Braves and the Kempville 73s game.
That's fantastic, because we're going to talk about the 73s and the Brockville Braves series a little bit later. We've got a clip from Gene Falsetto, the head coach of the Brockville Braves U18 team. And we also will talk about the Buffalo Sabres firing their head coach later on in the show, as well as hear from captain of the men's Canadian wheelchair basketball team, Bo Hedges, later on towards the end of the hour. So we have a great show planned for you this week, but we're going to kick things off talking about the Ottawa Senators and specifically their 4-3 win against the Maple Leafs on Sunday, because it's the Battle of Ontario and there aren't too many more rivalries that are more exciting than the Battle of Ontario. And as it stands, the season series sits at 3 games apiece. And when the Sens have been in the basement for so long, and you're just dying for a taste of playoff hockey when you get these series against these heated rivalries, how excited is it for you as a fan, Eric, to watch like Ottawa and Toronto in these series this season?
Oh yeah, the Battle of Ontario is always an exciting matchup. This game had all of the ups and downs that any Battle of Ontario has had. Yeah, you've got like a bit of an excitement in the beginning of the game during the pregame warm-up. You have Matt Murray skating to the bench and then skating off and having to go off injured with what is being called an upper body injury. So they get their backup, Joey Decord, to go into the game for what ended up being his first win in the NHL. 33 saves, absolutely massive. And I mean, just the quick goal scoring in this game was the biggest difference between the Sens and the Leafs.
You mentioned the Murray injury, which was one of the biggest things to come out of the game, because the Sens are paying him $6.25 million for this year and the next three. So when he gets injured and you've got the expansion draft coming up and you have to make a decision whether you want to protect Joey Decord or Matt Murray, and now it looks like the Murray injury is going to be more of a longer term thing, because they picked up Anton Forsberg, the goaltender, off of waivers from the Winnipeg Jets yesterday. What do you make of the Sens goaltending situation and the injury to Matt Murray, Zach?
Well, losing Matt Murray is a pretty big loss for the Senators right now, especially when they're trying to get some ground going, you know, getting a good chemistry going amongst the team. There's a lot of young presences on the team, you know, and that's good energy for the team. And Joey Decord, he really stepped up, and you need guys like him to step up. It was great to see him get his first NHL win on Sunday, especially against the Leafs, which are already a powerhouse of a team, you know, like a lot of big bucks spent on that front line. So for him to be able to rally with his team was really great to see.
Absolutely. I love that you mentioned the Leafs top line, because they make a combined $40 million and they're on a little bit of a skid right now. But to stay focused on the Ottawa Senators and Joey Decord, one of the biggest stories that people have been talking about after his first career win on Sunday night is just how real and authentic he comes across with the media and to the fans. I know we had a show on CKDJ last year with some of the students in our program called The Morning Skate, and he took the time to come on and be interviewed by college students, and that just goes to show you how like approachable he is. And when a lot of the times you see players like with use all the cliches in interviews, they just say, oh, you got to get pucks deep and good things will happen, or you just got to get in front of the puck and give your team a chance to win. But that wasn't what we heard from Joey Decord on Sunday night, because he got really emotional talking about the people that helped him get to where he is now. And it was great to see. What were your thoughts on the authenticity of Joey Decord, Eric?
Yeah, he was just straight up authentic. He was absolutely wonderful. The post-game interview, like you said, got emotional. And I mean, who wouldn't get emotional? You're playing for the Ottawa Senators. You beat the Toronto Maple Leafs 4-3 on a Sunday night, 33 saves on 36 shots. Like, it was an absolutely incredible game for him, especially being called on at the last minute. Like, he wasn't expecting to be playing until Matt Murray, like I say, tweaked something. We don't know what it was, but an upper body injury, skated to the bench, went off. It was a kind of a comedy of errors, but he got in, he didn't let it bother him, and he just played lights out. Joey Decord just stood on his head. It was absolutely incredible to watch.
It's a good thing the Sens did pull out with the win, because Brady Tkachuk had an opportunity to hit the empty net with just before the Leafs made it 4-2, and he was going to lose some sleep if the Leafs had came back after he missed that opportunity, but thankfully they didn't. But is it just sort of funny that these teams can play in these high-scoring games, and these comebacks keep happening, and just how entertaining this rivalry has been this season?
Yeah, definitely. It is it is just adding a whole new element to the rivalry between Toronto, Ottawa, that has been such a strong rivalry for so many years. And I find with this rivalry, there's just been so much where they just, no matter who gets the win, no matter who is first and who's last in the league, it's always an exciting matchup between these two teams.
Moving on to the Brockville Braves and the U18 AAA hockey, the HEO. You had your opportunity to call your first game on Saturday between Brockville and Kempville. Zach, how did that game go, and how was your first experience doing color commentary?
Well, I was really nervous getting into it, but Eric was awesome enough to walk me through the process and kind of get me prepared for it. It was a lot. It's been a while too since I've seen a live game, so being lucky enough to experience that with everyone was also really great. And we saw some really great hockey from the future of the NHL, perhaps. Brockville was looking to snap their losing streak against Kempville 73s, but it didn't work out for them in the end. But they all had a great performance, and it was really great.
And the losing streak, unfortunately, continued for Brockville on Sunday, because I had the opportunity to call that game with Bryson Geeky. And it was a couple of close games this weekend, though, at least. It was 2-1 on Saturday, 3-1 on Sunday. And after the 9-1 loss a couple of weeks before those games, it was great to see Brockville bounce back and have some close games. What do you think that Brockville needs to do moving forward to continue to keep these games close and get back in the win column, Eric?
Yeah, I mean, the game that Zach and I did on Saturday, it was the first time in the six games after Sunday, the six games, that Brockville had actually scored the first goal. So they did the right thing. They got the first goal. They had the lead through most of the game, and it wasn't until two goals in pretty quick succession by Spencer Neal and Dylan Tamage of the 73s that caused the Braves to lose. And you know what? Zach McDonald in goal for the Braves just put on a clinic. He seemed like he wasn't going to be beatable. And if not for Spencer Neal's goal, where he was just wide open standing beside an empty net as the pass came beautifully from the point for just quick tap in goal. And then the goal by Tamage was just like on the fifth or sixth rebound, like he just could not get control of the puck. It bounced off one last time and he was able to just tap it in. So he is not at fault for either of those goals allowed. And at the other end, I mean, what can you say about Ryan Donovan, the son of former NHLer Sean Donovan? Just another absolutely incredible game, only allowing the one goal and keeping his team in it so that they could pull off the come from behind victory.
And we have an interview clip that you had the interview conducted with Brockville Braves U18 head coach Gene Falsetto. So we'll take a listen to that and we'll be right back on the press box.
Welcome to the show, Gene. Thanks for joining me. With the global pandemic shutting down your league multiple times, how have you been dealing with that as a coach?
I think that the most important part has been just communication with players and parents. I'm a big believer in communicating at all times with players. I've kept in touch with them over the Christmas season. I asked them all to send me an email in regards to their training regimen. And, you know, obviously being on the ice wasn't possible, but, you know, going for a walk still is, going for a run. So I think to answer your question, I think communication has just been the key and making sure that my players are still engaged and don't give up on a lost season, right? Because at times it looked bleak, but, you know, now we're here, right? And it's been, you know, 2.5, 3 months off for these players. So it was tough this weekend, but it just comes down to communicating with players and parents at all times, to be honest with you.
Now, what steps were put in place that made it possible to get back to hockey in as safe a way as possible? Like, what rules were in place that would have been different from a regular season?
Tons, to be honest with you, which is expected. We all have to fill out COVID forms before we enter an arena, half an hour prior to, or you're not allowed in. Once you enter the arena, you obviously have to have on a mask. You then are read the Riot Act of what not to do, you know, social distancing, stuff like that. Then when you enter, you have 20 minutes. So the days of warming up an hour before games, you literally are there 15 minutes to get ready, get on the ice, get off the ice, do what you got to do. And after games, you aren't allowed to shower. You literally put on your clothes and you leave. So there's been a lot of work behind the scenes. It's been incredible to just be even up to date with all the regulations that they thought of and put in place that have just made it so much easier for everybody and made it possible that we're one of the only leagues that's actually playing hockey right now.
Definitely. It's a huge step for your players and for the fans, the parents, all that stuff. What are the plans for how the schedule will be from here on out? Will they extend the season? Will they have only a select number of games until the season finishes, the playoffs? Like, how does that work with this pandemic and the shutdowns?
There has been talk of playoffs, not too much, because we don't want to look too far ahead, to be honest with you. But right now, what we're doing is we're playing every team four times, and it's going to be turning into a season of 16 games because you're split into three different divisions. So we'll be playing, I think, Renfrew, Pembroke, Smith Falls, and Kentville will be our division specifically.
Now, what would you say has been the biggest impact on the players that you coach because of the stops and starts, as well as what's the biggest impact on you as a coach because of the stop, the start, and so on that's happened so far?
The hardest thing for the players, I think, has just been the conditioning. I saw it this weekend. It's not to insult anybody or anything. It was from both teams. It wasn't just my team. You could see that by the time the third period came around, a lot of players were gassed. So I think the conditioning, and I also think the mental aspect. I don't think a lot of people talk about the mental aspect enough, about how these kids have been so used to being at an arena 5 days a week, and now we're locked in a house for 7 days out of the week. So flipping that mental switch for them. So I think those are definitely the two toughest aspects. For myself as a coach, as I said earlier, I'm a big communicator. I like talking to my players. I like seeing my players all the time, you know, letting them know how they're doing, if they're not doing well. So not having that constant ability to see them, talk to them, correct them, and actually coach has been challenging. But even myself, I mean, I've been coaching. This is my 10th year now. Myself mentally being away from the arena, like, I'm not going to say it didn't matter what the score was this weekend, but I was just happy to be back on a bench and have a sense of reality back.
Yeah, definitely. It's huge for the players, obviously, to be able to get back to the routine, to get back to practicing, to get back to just ice time in general. Okay. Now, on that note, with your team based out of Brockville, do you have a home arena, or are you constantly moving from arena to arena for practices, games, etc.? How does that work with your team?
We rotate between the Brockville Memorial Center, and we also practice at a Cardinal. It hasn't really affected us too much. So to be honest with you, it's been pretty seamless that way.
So now with the limited amount of people like in the arena and even on the bench in that regards, do all the coaching staff and everything have to wear a mask at all times while they're in there? Or do the players have to wear a mask everywhere except for on the ice? Or how does that work?
Yeah, so whenever you're in the arena, except for on the ice, you should be wearing a mask and you have to wear a mask. In the dressing room itself, you still have to. When you go into the hallway, you still have to. Just going onto the ice and on the ice itself, players do not have to, but coaches and even refs actually wore them this weekend. So for face-offs, they would pull it up. It's different, but it's been fun, and fun is a good challenge, I think so.
Perfect. Awesome. Well, thank you so much for joining me. That was fantastic.
No, thanks for all you do. I really appreciate it. I know the players appreciate it. The parents do. So I thank you very much.
Awesome. Thank you.
Just heard from Gene Falsetto, head coach of the U18 Brockville Braves, and just talking about the differences that the rule changes due to COVID have played this season. And before the interview, Eric, you mentioned the strong play in net from Zach McDonald, and I just covered the CCHL draft on Tuesday and Wednesday night, and the big news for Brockville coming out of the draft was their first overall selection. They selected Nate Galbraith, the goaltender out of the Upper Canada Cyclones program, regarded as the strongest goaltender in Bantam AAA. So lots to look forward to for the Brockville Braves goaltending moving towards the future. But with that being said, if you haven't seen the interviews from Tuesday night with the first and second round selections in the CCHL draft, you can check it out on the CCHL Facebook page conducted by our colleague Josh Primo. And there's lots of great content with all the teams welcoming their new players to the organization. So before we head to break, I just want to say congratulations to all the players selected in this year's draft. And it's a great accomplishment that you've worked hard for. So be proud of it. And I can't wait to see the new players on the ice moving forward. That does it for our first segment on the Press Box, and we will be right back after the break on CKDJ 107.9.
If you have any food to spare, now is the perfect time to give back. On Wednesday, December 9th, from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m., the Algonquin College Student Association's Food Cupboard will be collecting non-perishable food items and basic hygiene supplies. If you find yourself with nothing in the pantry, they'll also be accepting monetary donations with which they will be purchasing food and gift cards. On Wednesday, December 9th, from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m., you can make a difference. A little goes a long way.
Welcome back to the Press Box on CKDJ 107.9.
I'm Ryan Woods, and with me is Eric Fox and Zach Nadeau. And right now, the big news out of the NHL yesterday was the Buffalo Sabres firing head coach Ralph Krueger. And that wasn't a surprise to anyone, as the Sabres dropping 12 games in a row. And Zach, with you being a fan of the Sabres, talk to us about how the Ralph Krueger era will be remembered.
Well, the Ralph Krueger era will be remembered almost bittersweetly. You know, there was a lot of excitement when he came in. Great name for a coach. You know, he had a lot of potential. He kept saying to trust in the system. And for a while, we all did. You know, he was a fresh start. Like I said, he was part of a fresh start. We had a new GM. But this season proved more than ever that the system that he planned just did not work. We had the best team, best Sabres team, on paper in a while, I think. And for whatever reason, we just couldn't make it work. And if you're trying to be a team that's trying to contend for the cup, you have to play better than just guys out there playing hockey. You have to play like a team. And it just didn't seem like anybody on the Buffalo Sabres were really playing as a team. I just think there's a really negative cloud inside the locker room. And I think they really need a shakeup here. Right now, the assistant coach is taking over, and he was in charge of our power play. So at a time, that power play was third in the league. So it might be a little better. We might see some results when he gets control of the whole team. But if I were in charge and I were Kevin Adams, I would get on the phone with Gerard Gallant, because what he did for the Vegas Golden Knights was – like unheard of. He had brought a brand new team almost to the cusp of winning the cup, you know, and if I'm like a GM who's at the bottom of a barrel with a team, I want to get a coach like that who can really make something out of nothing.
And if I'm going to be honest with you, when they brought in Ralph Kruger, I did not have high hopes for the hiring because he had an awful tenure in Edmonton where he was below 500 and did not last more than a season. And although he took that European team to the finals of the World Cup a few years ago, they had Anze Kopitar and they had like Zdeno Chara, and it was just a 7-game tournament. Even though they were underdogs, it's not as if it would have been unheard of for him to take them to the finals. And I'm not going to get too excited over a coach who looked good in 1 7-game tournament. And it ended up that I was at least right. I'm wrong a lot of the time, but this take was one of my better ones because despite having Jack Eichel and Sam Reinhart, and as you mentioned, the best assembled Sabres roster out of the entirety of their current 10-year playoff slump, it didn't work out. And I respect your point that they have to take a fresh approach and look at new systems and new opportunities for coaches. So where do you think that they go from here? Do you think that they'll stick with their assistant coaches, or do you think that Gerard Gallant is a realistic target for them to bring in?
Well, I'm as hopeful as ever it's going to be Gerard Gallant, but there's been talks, rumors that it could be Babcock. But I mean, we can speculate all we want. I think we're going to stick with this assistant coach for maybe the rest of the season, and then we'll see what Seattle does. Maybe once they snap up whatever coach they get, we'll go after what's left, I guess.
And another huge question that has been raised this season about the Buffalo Sabres is the future of superstar Jack Eichel, who was the consolation prize for losing the Connor McDavid draft lottery. And when I think about the potential return package the Sabres could get for Jack Eichel, you look at what the Sens got for Erik Karlsson when he was like 28 years old. But Jack Eichel is only, 23 years old? How much of a return could the Sabres get for Jack Eichel? And do you think it's worth them trading their franchise player, Eric?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely think it could be worthwhile if they get the right package back. They could get one heck of a haul. It would be probably among one of the biggest trades ever in the NHL in regards to what the Sabres can get back. I mean, he hasn't proven himself per se just because he's has not been surrounded by a good enough team in his career yet. And the Sabres have been pretty bad since he's been drafted. And he was the hope was that he was going to be like the savior and all this kind of stuff. And there was the jokes, obviously, at one point that he was the GM and he was the owner because of the way that he was acting and stuff. But you know what? If they do end up trading him and move on from him, it would be an insane haul in return, and I can't even imagine what they would get. I would see multiple prospects, probably multiple first round picks, and maybe even like a top end player as well, like at least one for sure.
And same question for you, Zach. Do you think that it would be worth moving on from Jack Eichel, considering the type of return that the Sabres would get from him and the need for a drastic change in culture surrounding the team?
Well, as we all know, Jack Eichel hates losing, and this season was no different. I don't see him jumping ship or being traded this year due to how expensive he is and how uncertain these playoffs could be. But once Seattle comes on the scene, who knows? Maybe even they might snap him up. But as opposed to what kind of a deal it would have to be, like Eric said, it would have to be the right one. We have to get a top prospect, maybe even a goalie, because Lord knows we need a goalie at this point. But at the same time, I really don't want to see Jack Eichel go. Jack Eichel is part of the reason why I became a Sabres fan. He is like a really cool player, and I think guys should be able to rally around him, but you know, maybe just this losing streak just got the better of him. And he hasn't been playing the same. And I think that's evident with his injuries, and he's been playing with injuries. But All in all, I think he should stay with the team, maybe just for one more season. There's been talks maybe Taylor Hall's been going to stay, but maybe I've been hearing now they're not as serious. But if we lose Jack Eichel, all hope may be lost for Buffalo.
And we haven't even touched on the Jeff Skinner contract and Rasmus Ristolainen and a bunch of other players, Taylor Hall, who are underperforming considering their salary. But that just goes to show you the state that Buffalo is in. So hopefully for yourself and other fans alike, they can turn it around. But we have a limited amount of time. So we're going to move on to the NBA and the Toronto Raptors. And it would be a massive understatement to say that they've been in a little bit of a slump as they've dropped a few games in a row there. And they're just in a slump right now with the players out on COVID protocol. Are you optimistic, Zach, that they can turn things around with returning superstar players to the lineup?
Absolutely. As soon as star quality players like those make their presence felt back on the court, it instantly revitalizes the team. It instantly revitalizes the whole presence of the court. And it's not just one superstar, it's three we're missing. We're missing Van Vliet, Siakam, and OG Anunoby. And I just think once all three of them get back into the fold and once they get comfortable once again, we're going to see a much more competitive Toronto Raptor team going forward in this season. But the Raptors are going to have to, you know, hit the ground running a little bit once they get back in the lineup. You know, looking ahead, they have to face a really strong Utah Jazz. And then they've got the Cavs and the Rockets. We've never faced Cleveland yet this season, so it's a little unknown of what to expect there. But we have beaten the Rockets in our last game, and I don't think they've been the same since Harden left. It's been a little bit of a bittersweet team going on there. But I don't know. I think we'll see a little bit of a change maybe in the Raptors.
Despite the incredibly slow start out of the gate for the Raptors this season, they managed to fight their way back up to a near 500 record before this slump kicked off. And when you look at their coach in Nick Nurse and the fact that they won the NBA championship just 2 years ago and had a strong playoff performance last year, do you think if there's any team that has the capabilities of turning this around and going on a run to get back in the playoffs, do you think that it could be the Toronto Raptors, Eric?
Yeah, I mean, they have as good a team as pretty much anybody in the Eastern Conference. It's going to be interesting to see what they can do down the stretch, if they can push for that playoff spot. It's going to be tight. It's going to be rough. But like Zach said, once they get the superstars back, like Siakam, like Van Vliet, like Anunoby, these guys are huge parts of their team. And if they can get them back on the court, get them back into the swing of things, get them back comfortable with their teammates and back to 100% health if they had any sort of effects from being on the COVID list and not playing for so long, they can definitely be one of the more dangerous teams in the Eastern Conference.
And one more fun NBA headline before we move on is the LeBron James purchase of a partial ownership of the Boston Red Sox. So this is just a fun story that one of those ones that comes out of nowhere. And we know LeBron's getting up there in age, so maybe he just needs a hobby for once he retires. But what's your thought on the LeBron James Boston Red Sox story? We'll start with Eric.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not surprised. You see it more and more where athletes will buy stakes in other teams and other sports, especially like you say, as they start to get near the end of their career or once they're done their career, to try and have a stake in something, have something to do in their retirement and that. So it'll be interesting to see what happens here with LeBron as a part owner, a very minimal part owner, but a part owner of the Boston Red Sox.
And what do you think of the LeBron James purchase of partial ownership of the Red Sox, Zach?
I think he should have gone with a better team, to be honest. But, you know, to each their own, he's already got the Roush Fenway Racing Team as well. And he owns 2% of the Liverpool Football Club, too, which is kind of neat.
And finally, to close off this segment, we're going to talk about NFL free agency, and it's been going on for a while now, but we're still seeing some big names coming off the board each day. who are some of the players that have caught your attention over the past couple of days, Eric?
Yeah, I mean, I'm a New England Patriots fan, and they have been spending more money this offseason in the 2+ days of free agency than I have ever seen them spend in free agency. They signed Jonnu Smith, the tight end, for 4 years, $50 million. They signed Matthew Judon, a linebacker, for 4 years, $56 million. Jalen Mills, a defensive back, 4 years, $24 million. Wide receiver Nelson Aguilar, 2 years, $26 million. And they even signed Hunter Henry, another tight end, 3 years, $37.5 million. So they are huge additions for my team. But some of the other big names, I mean, if you want to consider them big names, quarterbacks, Jameis Winston re-signed 1 year, $12 million with the Saints. Ryan Fitzpatrick, the quarterback from the Miami Dolphins, he's now with the Washington football team on a 1 year, $10 million contract. And the biggest contract that was signed so far is offensive lineman Trent Williams. He's signing with the 49ers for 6 years, $138 million. He is now the highest paid offensive lineman in the league. That's insane. That's insane amounts of money. And then you look at AJ Green, the longtime entire career with the Cincinnati Bengals wide receiver, 1 year, $8.5 million to the Cardinals. And that's not even all of them. There's so many names that have been signed to massive contracts. And then you got to talk about the defending Super Bowl champions, Rob Gronkowski, tight end, re-signs 1 year, $10 million with the Bucks, and they re-signed their big defensive end, Shaq Barrett, for 4 years, $72 million. So just so many big names being signed, moving teams or re-signing with their current teams. So, and the Saints, like, it's going to be interesting to see what happens with the whole retirement of Drew Brees, now with Jameis Winston and Taysom Hill signing. It's going to be a battle between those two players to see who gets the quarterback reins there.
I love that you mentioned the AJ Green signing with the Cardinals, because I'm a Cardinals fan, and they also signed JJ Watt. So if this was 2015, they might just be Super Bowl favorites, but hopefully those guys can stay healthy. And I love the storyline with the reunion between DeAndre Hopkins and JJ Watt. So I'm excited to see what the Cards have in store next year. What about you, Zach? Have you been following the NFL free agency, and what's caught your eye?
Honestly, the team that's got my eye is the San Francisco 49ers, because not so long ago, they almost won the championship. And they just signed, like Eric said, Trent Williams. They just re-signed fullback Kyle Juszczyk and cornerback Jason Verrett. Those two guys are awesome. And they're going to do everything they can to keep the other Williams on their team, K'Wan Williams. You know, he finished last season with the fourth best pass block rate. And it's going to be interesting to see where he ends up. I think the 49ers are slowly building their way back into a championship team here this next coming season.
Fantastic. That does it for our second segment on the Press Box. But we will be right back to hear from Bo Hedges, the captain of the men's Canadian national wheelchair basketball team.
Ottawa's new music.
I did the long way this time. I got a load on my mind.
This is new music.
Like living on token.
This is Ottawa's new music.
Are you
ready? This is CKDJ 107.9. What is Ottawa's new music? This is new music.
Take me away.
This is Ottawa's new music.
You want me to keep it real? I'ma let you people on the deal. They want to keep this concealed. I think we should reveal.
This is CKDJ 107.9.
Welcome back to the Press Box on CKDJ 107.9.
I'm Ryan Woods, and with me is Eric Fox and Zachary Nadeau. Eric, you have the opportunity to talk to a very special guest, as he's the captain of the Canadian National Men's Wheelchair Basketball Team. How did that opportunity come up for you?
Yeah, so he's actually my mom's cousin, so nice relative, bragging rights for me, you know. But yeah, he's an absolutely incredible guy. Been playing, as you will hear in this interview, he's been playing wheelchair basketball for quite a few years. He's been with Team Canada. He's been to several Olympics, getting ready for the 2020 Olympics in 2021 after the delay with coronavirus. So yeah, enjoy the interview. It's going to be one heck of a fun time. Playing a sport like wheelchair basketball is extremely physical and is a tough sport to play at the best of times, let alone during a global pandemic. Players like my guest Bo Hedges, who's the captain of the Canadian men's wheelchair basketball team, have been greatly affected by the pandemic, as well as the lead up and training to the eventually postponed Tokyo Paralympics in 2020. Hi Bo, welcome to the show and thank you for joining me today.
Hello, thank you for having me.
Let's start out with just kind of a bit of a background. So where were you born, and like how did you end up getting into wheelchair basketball?
So I was born in northern British Columbia in Fort St. John, so the northeast corner up there. And my parents have a cattle ranch north of there up the Alaska Highway. So that's kind of where I grew up, chasing cows and being out in the country and that. And from there, I had an accident when I was 13 years old and fell out of a tree and broke my back and severed my spinal cord. So since then I've been confined to a chair and paraplegic. I was introduced to wheelchair basketball when I was in rehab and so in Vancouver after that. So I kind of got my first taste of it there. And then we, as I got back to Fort St. John, we started a team up there and started practicing with my brothers and cousins and a couple of the disabled guys in the community. And that just kind of was the base to started me on my path to Canadian junior teams, provincial teams, and eventually the national team in 2007 for the first time.
So how long have you been playing wheelchair basketball and how long have you been with Team Canada?
So I started playing kind of regularly in and around 1995, I guess. So I guess that's 26 years, somewhere in that range. It's been quite a while now. And then I've been on the national team since 2007 was when I made it for the first time in the spring. Made the Canadian junior team in 1997, I believe. It was kind of my first taste of international competition.
So now you are the captain or one of the captains of Team Canada. So how did that come to be for you to get the C, and how long have you been the captain?
So I've been the captain since I think right around 2010 in the World Championship there in Birmingham, England. So so it's been quite some time now, and just kind of one of those things that kind of, I don't want to say fell to me, but just kind of got moved on to me. And as the team progresses, and it was my time to kind of take that role within the group. And it's kind of, it's not something you actually say, oh, this is what I want to do. The team kind of actually decides it, and then you kind of take it over, right? So they feel you're ready for that position. So, yeah, it's a great honor to be a captain of the national team. And it's something that definitely drives me and motivates me to hold a certain level of personal accomplishment, work ethic, all those types of things to kind of fulfill that role and show the young guys what needs to be done.
Yeah, definitely a huge accomplishment for you as a player and for the team. What would you say has been the biggest moment of your career to date?
Well, I think I still have to go back to the London Games in 2012 when we won the gold medal. I think that for me personally, it was a big highlight. Obviously I was playing more and made a pretty big impact on the game in that tournament. And us as a team, after having kind of lost in the final to Australia in 2008, to be able to come back one more time as basically the same group and pull it together and win another gold medal for Canada. It was a pretty special moment for us all.
Okay, so now shifting gears to the obvious current pandemic, how has your personal personnel and your team's training been affected by the pandemic since the start last year?
Well, the biggest thing was when the pandemic hit, our training center closed completely, much like the rest of Canada did. And so that was in and around in March there, middle of March. And so that just threw everything into a bit of disarray, and then the games got canceled. So for that, what would have been the March through end of August run, it completely changed everything, right? Again, like I said, as it did for everybody in the world, sort of. It would have been a really busy summer, which is typical for a Paralympic lead in summer. You're on the road, you're playing a bunch of games, you're trying to play almost every team that is going to the games at least once, so you have a feel of what they do and so you can game plan, right?
So on that note, like, what has it been like for you and your team to get, like you said, kind of geared up for the Paralympics only to have it delayed and then now have to, I guess, kind of redo it and restart with the gear up to this year's hopeful Paralympics? And
well, mentally, yeah, it has been a challenge, right? And you, even as a veteran player, having experienced the games, you know, this would be the fourth time, I've never been through this, right? And so you can't necessarily plan the same way out. Like I keep diaries and journals of my training leading into the other games, and I've always kind of reflected on those as I move in, be like, oh yeah, this is kind of where I should be, or this is feeling good, like it was then, that sort of stuff. Whereas now it's pretty tough to compare to what we're experiencing now and where we are at, because we can't do a lot of the things and can't travel and play other teams, and we can't even get all of our players together, right? We have one guy that lives with his family in New York, Pat Anderson, another guy that's going to school in Alabama, Vincent Allaire, and so they can't come back and for training camps right now and be with us, and we have a few guys that are out west and stuff like that, and it's challenging for them to even travel across the country. So those types of things are definitely hindering us, but a lot of countries around the world are in somewhat similar situations, and then some countries are playing in Europe and they got full schedules and they're like almost nothing has happened other than some modifications. So it's a very uneven landscape out there right now in terms of preparation for the games, and there's still so many questions in and around the games. Yeah, it's going to be quite a different thing to prepare for and experience when we're there.
So now with that, like, what kind of expectations does your team have? Do you have as a captain for your team heading into an Olympics that was supposed to happen last year that's now supposed to happen this year based on previous teams and how many players have returned and all that?
There is a lot more uncertainty because of the preparations, and like I said, the landscape's a little different for all teams right now, so we'll see where we are end up, but I think realistically getting into that top eight crossover and giving ourselves a chance to compete in that next phase of the games is still our goal.
Now, in regards to the games, like, what kind of measures are you aware of that are in place? Like, will there be daily testing? Will you need your vaccine before you head over? Like, how has that been relayed to the players and the athletes?
And there's what's called a playbook that's being put out by the International Olympic Committee and the International Paralympic Committee at this point. It's quite open-ended and not a ton of details, which fairly so is because the landscape is changing continuously, right? What is allowed this week might not be allowed next week, and with vaccines and rollout and stuff. So far at this point, they have said that we don't need a vaccine to go, and it's encouraged if you're able to get it out, I think. So, and then the testing they're looking at every fourth day right now, which seems like it's not enough, but those things are all kind of in negotiations, and as we've kind of talked about, so many things can change leading into it. So to answer your question, we don't really know.
That's fair. I mean, it's hard, especially with months being months away and not really knowing if it's going to happen, how it's going to happen, and that kind of stuff. Now, the last question I do have is, there was kind of reports coming out that at least in the States, the Paralympics are going to be widely covered on TV for the first time in either ever or in a long time. Have you heard anything about, like, CBC or any of the broadcasting rights in Canada, and what kind of coverage is that for you guys as athletes to have that national, international TV coverage?
Well, for us, I mean, the more coverage, the better. It's much easier now with the digital age and internet and stuff. From my 2008 games, where email was even still kind of very new technology to some extent, to London in 2012, where you could start watching online and then obviously Rio is built from there. So there's a lot more avenues to access it. But having it on CBC or CTV and kind of some primetime slots and building from what they've had in other years would obviously help the sport and the Paralympics grow in Canada. And so there has been a little bit of talk, and CBC has said that there's going to be more. And I haven't actually read the details on what specifically they're going to do, but there is talk from those major broadcasters that they're going to do more, and that's going to be more of the prime time role. So that'll be great in terms of helping us showcase our sports.
Thank you for taking time out of your busy training schedule to join me today, Bo, and I look forward to watching you at the Paralympics this coming summer.
All right, thank you very much for having me, and yeah, it'll be exciting.
Thanks again to Bo Hedges for taking the time to do the interview with Eric, and it was great to hear from him, as he's got quite the story. So thanks for conducting that interview, Eric. It was really great to hear from him.
Yeah, definitely. It was really fun to do and to catch up. I mean, he is a relative, like I said, and we don't get to see each other as often. So to be able to meet up on Zoom and him to be able to give me the time out of his busy training schedule to do the interview was fantastic.
That's great. And that does it for our third segment. We'll be right back to wrap things up with some expert, I don't know if we want to call it expert picks, but we'll see what betting lines Zach likes for this evening. And we'll be right back with the Press Box on CKDJ 107.9.
Is Ottawa's new music.
I woke up with growing pains.
This is new music.
Run with me.
This is Ottawa's new music. This is CKDJ 107.9.
Welcome back to the Press Box on CKDJ 107.9.
I'm Ryan Woods, and with me is Eric Fox and Zachary Nadeau. And we've got some previews for the upcoming week. We're going to preview the weekend schedule for the Brockville U18 Braves, as well as take a look at what's coming up for the Ottawa Senators before closing things off with Zach's expert betting picks. So, Eric, how does the Brockville Braves U18 schedule look for their next couple games?
Yeah, they have a huge game coming up tonight at 5:30 p.m. and then another game Sunday at 6 p.m. That's going to be in Kempville, both games against the 73s. This is games number 7 and 8 of their season series against the 73s. They are 0-6 versus Kempville so far, but if they can get a good, like an absolutely incredible goaltending outing by both of their goalies over the weekend, it's going to be huge for them if they can at least get one of the wins here to get on the board and avoid Kempville from going 8-0 in this season series.
And we will have the call with both of those games on CKDJ. So I'm excited that I'm going to get to call with you tonight, the game tonight, as well as with Bryson Geeky on Sunday. So hopefully the Braves can get some wins. Moving on to the Ottawa Senators. They, of course, as we talked about earlier, they had the win on Sunday against the Leafs, and then they dropped the game in Monday in overtime against the Canucks. And then last night, I didn't get the chance to catch the end of the game, but Joey DeCord injured in the third period, and it didn't look good. So Philip Gustafson had to come in, and it's lucky for the Sens that with Matt Murray out that they have a few days off now. But what's the schedule for the Sens next week, and what do you think about the latest development with Joey DeCord going down?
Yeah, they don't play again until Monday night versus Calgary. So they have a few days to hopefully get Joey Decord healthy, depending on how bad the injury ends up being. If they can get Matt Murray healthy, no real timeline on either of them. And I mean, like you said, luckily they have a lot of goalies and they picked up Anton Forsberg off waivers. So that's another goalie to add to the mix in case those guys are not able to come back by next week. So yeah, next Monday versus the Flames is their next game. And then they'll be playing the night of our next show next Thursday against the Leafs for their game seven. Yeah, they'll be playing game seven of their season series versus the Leafs next Thursday after our next episode of this show. So that'll be interesting to see next week how the schedule comes out.
I'm excited to preview that game because that'll be the Sens Stanley Cup of the season if they're able to take a 4-3 lead in the season series against the Toronto Maple Leafs. So I can't wait to talk about that next week. But it'll be interesting to see what happens. And Zach, with the goaltending situation, before we move on to your expert picks, we get to see Filip Gustavsson play his first few minutes of NHL action next week. But what do you make of the Sens' latest development in the crease? And obviously not ideal to have Anton Forsberg and Filip Gustavsson as your 1-2 punch in that.
Well, if I'm Ottawa, you're going to have to get a stable tandem going between goalies, because not only are we facing Calgary pretty soon, we're also facing Toronto again, and then a 4-game series against Montreal, and they have a very good tandem with Price and Jake Allen.
And do we have any final thoughts on the Sens or the week ahead before I move on to Zach's picks?
I think this team just has a really solid foundation right now to make a really strong team next season. They're playing the right hockey. They've got a good mindset. I'm full in on this sicko mode action.
I love the sickos, especially like the cardboard cutouts and everything, and just seeing DJ Smith buy into it the other day with answering the question from Gino Retta if he was a supporter of the movement, his response being yes, ha ha ha, yes. It's when you're in last place, you got to be able to have some fun. So it's great to see that. And final thoughts from you, Eric?
Yeah, I mean, I can't say enough about the Sens sicko mode. It's been huge for the boost of the players, the fans, just something for everybody to rally behind. And yeah, I mean, they'll be nice to... It'll be nice for them to have the week off, not play again until Monday. So multiple days in a row to just kind of relax, refresh, restart, and then get back into action again on Monday versus the Flames. So busy week ahead next week. And like Zach said, with that 4-game series coming up after that game against Toronto, against Montreal, they need to hope that they're at least one of their goalies gets back healthy, because they need to get something solid in net heading into those games.
And moving on to Zach's predictions, did you like any over-unders or some money lines for tomorrow? What did you see that caught your eye?
Well, my strongest pick is, in fact, an over-under, and I'm betting the over in the Winnipeg Jets and Edmonton Oilers game. I'm saying you hammer the over in this one, because both teams played their starting goalies in last night's game, and both teams have a 3.32 goals per game average this season, so we're going to see some fireworks in net between those two teams. My other pick is a money line, and it's with Minnesota against Colorado. Now, the Minnesota Wild are enjoying some of the best hockey this season. They're on a 5-game win streak so far, and they're 2-2 with the Avs this year. Now, Grubauer should be getting the nod in this one, as he's been the backbone for Colorado with a 16-7 record. But Minnesota needs to get this win tonight in regulation to distance themselves from Colorado in the standings. And if you're feeling spicy, I've got one more pick for you. It's an absolute dog of a pick, but I predict the Sabres are going to beat the Boston Bruins tonight. Now, before you change the radio channel, hear me out. Call me crazy, but almost every time a coach is fired from a team, that team wins the next game or the team starts to turn around. I've seen it happen with Calgary, and it's happened this season with Montreal, and it almost sounds like poetic justice here, but imagine. The Sabres fire the worst coach in their history, and in the first meeting against Boston, one of the biggest and meanest teams in the league, the Sabres snap their 12-game loss streak. If that's not the perfect way to end this streak, I don't know what is. So Those are my three picks. I'd go for Minnesota beating Colorado with the money line, bet the over in Winnipeg and Edmonton. And if you're feeling it, if you're feeling tricky, go for the Sabres against Boston.
I wish I could have your back on that Sabres pick. And as much as I love your Minnesota and your over pick in the other game, it's just hard to pick the Sabres. Of course, the losing streak has to end eventually.
Next season, but who knows?
That's a great point. I mean, it's so bad there right now that if it was up to me and I was putting money on the line, I'd take the Bruins with the spread. What do you think of Zach's picks, Eric?
Yeah, I mean, that Winnipeg versus Edmonton game is going to be hype. I mean, like Zach said, both teams playing the night before, both teams playing their backups, and it's just going to be probably a shootout. It's going to be maybe like a 9-8 game or something crazy. I can definitely see that over pick being the game winner, like the big winner. As for that Sabres one, I'm with you, Ryan. I understand the loyalty there, Zach, but wow, that's ballsy to try and be like, hey, I'm going to pick Boston to lose to the Sabres. But I mean, you never know. Stranger things have happened, right? So
I wouldn't parlay it with those other two picks. That's for sure.
There, we can all agree on that to end the show. But thanks, Eric and Zach, for taking the time to join me on the reboot. And we'll be back next Thursday with our next episode, which I can't wait for. But it's been a pleasure talking with the both of you on the reboot of the Press Box. And thanks for coming on the show today, guys.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for tuning in, and we hope you enjoyed the episode of The Press Box, and we'll be back next week with The Press Box on CKDJ 107.9.